all the docket. Good morning. For a moment there, you thought you were unopposed, didn't you? You may proceed.
May it please the court, I'm Richard Conrad. I represent Robert Hale in the Conrad & Company Law Firm in Virginia Beach. The unusual nature of this case is such that there are sections in the codes of Virginia, the Virginia Construction Code and the Virginia Administrative Code, that provide for certain things. And I'll read from the Virginia Administrative Code. Appointment of a building official. Every local building department shall have a building official as the executive official in charge of the department. The building official shall be appointed in a manner selected by the local governing body. After permanent appointment, the building official shall not be removed from office except for cause after having been afforded a full opportunity to be heard on specific and relevant charges by and before the appointing authority. DHCD shall be notified by the appointing authority within 30 days of the appointment or release of a permanent or acting building official. This statute, 13 VAC 5-63-50, section 105, is clear in its imperative because it says every local building department shall have a building official as the executive official in charge of the department. The shall is mandatory. It is to be obeyed by the municipalities. Now, you could imagine that sometimes municipalities, with some level of cleverness, might figure out ways to get around the mandatory requirement of the statute. In this case, we have a certain number of thoughts that enter into the case, and the town of Warrenton would argue that Mr. Robert Hale was not permanently appointed. And yet, over a pretty good spell of time, he had been acting as the building official who is in charge, the executive in charge of the department. He signed for court cases. He signed for permits. He supervised other inspectors. He performed all of the functions of the building official. And he was also listed in official publication of the town of Warrenton as the building official. Now then, is it possible that in the midst of such a mandatory statutory construction that a municipality would be permitted to say, well, you know, we gave him the job, but we never really officially permanently appointed him, even though he's been doing it forever?
May I ask you this? But is it really necessary in this case, as it presents itself on appeal, to go that far in either direction? I mean, the way the brief sort of juxtapose each other is he's a permanent building official as a matter of law, your argument, based
that
on the mandatory
correct.
Language, or your argument he's not a permanent building official as a matter of law, and thus a demur should be granted and was properly granted. Couldn't there be an interim position, which is the town had a statutory duty to appoint a permanent building official. This guy pled he was the building official and let the trial sort out whether that's true.
That is correct, Your Honor, and that should be something that be determined by the circuit court. There ought to be able to be an adequate hearing in addressing that type of a thing.
But you realize if you were to win an argument like that, it wouldn't be the court telling your client as a matter of law he's a permanent building official, but only that he pled it, he gets a chance to try to prove it.
Yes, but at the same time, that is part, you know, of the argument that we're before the court on, and And so let us say we go back to the circuit court, and the circuit court says, well, we don't have any official meeting where the town council got together and they said, Mr. Hale, you're the permanently appointed building official. And in this case, not only do we deal with an absence, possibly, of some official dome authorization of a permanency, but we have also a contract where he is hired for the position as an at-will employee. And so
Isn't that something you're going to have to do at trial? We're just dealing with your demur. What Justice Kelsey is saying, that you can win your case here and still have to prove the issue you're talking about at trial. Pretty simple.
Right. I understand, Your Honor. And part of what we argued before the panel of three to get here was the idea we had Compton in the Pulaski case, where Judge Gibb decided over there that he was indeed a permanently appointed building official. And because that's part of what we're here for, I would certainly be pleased to see that those types of issues that have been argued before the court could be determined at this time. I recognize the court may determine, go back and have the evidentiary presentation on these things, and if you don't win at that point because of the positions and the arguments stated by the town of Warrenton in their pleadings, then we're going to be back here. But for purposes of today, we want to present to the court the holistic position of not just Bob Hale, but building officials and fire marshals all over the Commonwealth of Virginia who are protected by the same law.
Counsel, you mentioned a contract indicating he was hired at will. Was that one of the documents that was included in the motion to crave lawyer?
I believe that is correct. And because you have the various arguments, the question whether or not there was a permanent appointment, the question whether or not he was an at-will employee, and the question whether or not he was acting or probationary, because the contract also indicated to be probationary. But probationary is a matter of law, and under the looking of this statute, would indicate some temporary nature of probationary.
I thought the probationary period expired, which would suggest that that's a routine thing with federal employment and other things. But once that probationary period expires, you're locked into a permanent status.
That is our position, Your Honor.
All right.
And
it didn't say
it was a 6-month probationary period, it just said it was a probationary period.
So your position is even if you're hired as an at-will employee, the fact that there may be a probationary period morphs that into a permanent position?
That would be correct. And that
just for this building official because of this statute, or is that your position as a matter of employment law?
I would argue as a matter of employment law, but I would also argue as a backup. You know, I think we have two forces involved here. One is the probationary nature that you had just mentioned a moment ago, that the law infers, like in real estate, where we're talking about there's a contract and it doesn't say when it's going to close, and real estate law infers that the closing will take place within a reasonable time. And so that's why we stick in time is of the essence clauses in our real estate purchase and sale agreements. So in the situation here, well, I would argue that same principle carries forth. And by doing that, then that would take care of the at-will employment clause in the contract. But even if the probationary was not determined, if the court had determined that had an inference as a matter of law of reasonableness, and certainly he'd been the building official long enough to pass any kind of probationary analysis, that even if the court was somewhat focused on the probationary aspect, we would still say that this statute militates because of the shall, because of the imperative, the mandatory nature of the intent of the legislature, that these men and women who serve in these positions will be protected. And when you look in the transcript, you see they explain why they moved him out of the position, and it's the very legislative intent to avoid that kind of a thing. So our position then is that The VAC and the VCC both militate against any evasive attempts to get around the clear statement of the statute, and that statute of Virginia and the intent of the legislature would trump the argument of the town of Warrenton and their contract, which they proffer as a means to get around the shall of the Virginia administrative.
But the contract, of course, as you point out, had a six-month probationary term, and as Justice McCullough just pointed out, that's what probationary term means. The definition is it's at will. So the expiration of at will certainly reasonably infers that the at will status is over and the for cause status begins. Is it more complicated than that?
Your Honor, that is our position. We agree with you 100%. That's the position we take. And each of our arguments are that the probationary trumps the at will, the statute trumps the at will, the legislative intent behind the statute trumps the at will, and the de facto nature of his position, if there is no establishment of an official permanent appointment, Judge Gibb is the backup position that, as a matter of law, the de facto nature of it, because they were treating him like that. I mean, he was signing court of documents for years as though he was the he had all the responsibility. Now they're saying he doesn't have the benefit of protection, and that is what we find so.
You want him reinstated, right?
Derogatory.
You want him reinstated.
That is correct.
But you concede that they could fire him for cause.
Yes. Oh, well, absolutely. They could, but they got to give him a full hearing.
Well, I understand that. So it's a rather unusual position that. The town of Warrenton says, let's not have a trial, I win. And you have a position, I agree with that, let's not have a trial, I win. Why don't we have a trial and see who wins?
Well, we would be delighted to have the trial. We just don't want to be preempted from having the trial by the interpretations here that he's not even entitled to the hearing to begin with because he wasn't permanently appointed. So we're glad to go back. We're ready to go back. We're excited to go back.
All right. You might have the opportunity.
And love being a lawyer. Your Honors, what I'd like to do is go ahead. I'll give back a little bit of time to the court, and I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal at the end if you don't have any more questions.
Well, you have 3 minutes you can use any way you'd like.
All right. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be before you today, and Virginia Beach salutes you on this crisp morning.
Good morning. Heather, may it please the Court, Heather Bardo on behalf of the Town of Warrenton, the appellee in this case. As I think you all have honed in on, this is a case that comes before you on a simple issue. Not maybe the law is not so simple, but the issue is whether or not the trial court should have overruled the demurrer. And so the Court has to say, looking at the amended complaint and the attachments, was there enough pled factually such that the account was stated and the court should have let it go forward.
Well, how about this? Paragraph 7, plaintiff was employed, ... as the building official, ... by permanent appointment.
That was my first bullet point, because I think we have to concede that that is actually obviously in the complaint. And had that been in the complaint and there had been no attachments to the complaint, I think this case would be in a different posture.
Well, the principal attachment is the grievance transcript, which was attached even before your craving order, and the director of planning for the town, when she was asked, was Bob hired as a building official, hired as an interim building official, answer, no.
Correct.
Well, if you're not interim, that implies, and the answer is no, and it's a party witness saying this, then the inference would be the opposite of interim is permanent.
Well, you can be a standing building official. I mean, there's different types of building officials. I think if you look at the code section that we're talking about, it requires some action to be taken to make someone a permanent official. And it allows the town to make a determination as to what process they want to go through to make them a permanent official. If you look at that same transcript at page 28 of the appendix, Mr. Hale acknowledges that he was not offered a position as a permanent official. He was offered a probationary position. That offer letter, I would say, which is at think 268 to 270, doesn't talk about permanent, doesn't talk about at will, doesn't talk about anything.
Right, but I'm sorry. I mean, one interpretation of this is that the town or locality has to have a bells and whistles job offer that says this is permanent and has to be clear about that. The alternative reading would be, well, as long as it doesn't make it clear that you're interim or in some temporary capacity, then the default is you're a permanent building official.
Well, I think if that was the intent of the statute, it would say that. I mean, the difficulty is when it says after permanent appointment, I think that reading to me assumes that something will be done, because it says in the statute as well that the building official shall be selected in a manner selected by the local governing body. So when you read that all together, to me, it reads like some action has to be taken to make you the permanent official. And I think what's interesting here, and you have to remember this is what the trial court had before it, was there's this allegation in the complaint, paragraph 7, that he was a permanent official. There's the acknowledgement by him that he was not hired as a permanent official. And if you look at his opening brief, page 4 and page 8, and this is exactly what happened before the trial court, his counsel acknowledged throughout the argument that he was never permanently appointed. So the trial court had before it the offer letter, which wasn't a permanent appointment. It had before it nothing showing a permanent appointment. It had before it his acknowledgement that he was hired in a probationary period, and the counsel's acquiescence that he was never permanently appointed. And so what happened after all that was before the trial court is I think the trial court rightly disregarded paragraph 7 because it was contradicted by the documents attached and by concessions from counsel.
Ask the same question again. Probationary status is at-will status. That's what it means. And if you hire an employee on a probationary status and it has an expiration date, employment law does infer that at the end of the expiration, if you're still there, you've lost your at-will status and now you're in for-cause status. Every one of your employee manuals say that, and the state grievance procedure says that. As best I can tell, that is the norm everywhere. So I'm not sure how the inference of that information, when you place it against the direct allegation of the complaint, undermines it. In fact, I'm quite candidly wondering why it doesn't reinforce the allegation of the complaint. So dissuade us or me from that view.
Well, I have a difficult time addressing that question. It's not something that's been brought up before, frankly, on brief. But I can tell you that...
He raised his probationary status. I mean, your argument is exactly that. Your argument is, but Judge, he was not hired as a permanent. And his response was, I know that. For 6 months, I was at will. But when that expired, I became a for-cause employee. Well, that's what a permanent employee means. In fact, the whole point of the statute is to give you for-cause protection.
But the statute doesn't say after permanent employment. It says after permanent appointment. And it allows the town to decide how to make that appointment. And the town's position is it never made that appointment with respect to this gentleman.
Well, why don't you have a trial and find out if that's true?
Right, that was a question I had, because the statute, you focus understandably on the language after permanent appointment, but the earlier part of the statute or regulation says the building official shall be appointed in a manner selected by the local governing body. So local governing body, according to the town code, it says town manager has a duty to appoint a building official. So if the town code says the town manager has that duty, then... And the employment letter comes from the Director of Planning and Community Development. Is there a factual question as to whether the town manager delegated that permanent appointment to the Director of Planning and Community Development? And it just seems like there might be some facts that would elucidate the status of this person as the town has structured its affairs.
Yeah, I think we had argued on brief that delegation was done. I think that's supported by the testimony of the grievance hearing, so I don't think there's any question but that letter came from somebody who was appointed by the town manager to do that. But I think really the focus at the trial court was on this, after all these concessions were made that he wasn't permanently appointed, the focus at the trial court was that he was a de facto building official, and I do want to address that briefly. That was based on the Compton versus Town of Pulaski case. And that case is right on point. I would agree it's right on point. But it's a circuit court case which is not binding on the circuit court in Fauquier. And I would say it's plain wrong, because what that case does is it rewrites the statute. It says if the town does not appoint a permanent building official, that somehow they eventually morph into a permanent building official. I don't think the statute is ambiguous. I don't think it's the court's job to rewrite the statute. If that were the law, no one would have any guidance as to when this person morphed from non-permanent to permanent. You wouldn't know if it took a certain amount of time, if it took a certain amount of duties. It just would give no guidance. And so I don't think that case is certainly not binding, and I don't think it comes to the right conclusion. So that's all I have. It's, I think, a pretty simple issue as far as the legal issue as to what the court does. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. You have 3 minutes if you choose to use it.
Thank you very much. It's good to be back up here. I appreciate it. I find it fascinating and quite educational for me to hear the responses of opposing counsel to questions, particularly about the letter that was given, and that letter conveyed the extension of the job to Robert Hale. And Ms. Bardot mentioned that that letter clearly had the authority, and the question was this appointing authority given to the one who issued the letter? And she indicated, yes, that's clear that that authority was given. Which basically, let me rephrase that in my own Conradism, and that is that she is saying that we believe that the letter itself being given and extended to him is evidence itself of the authority behind the letter to say there's this offer of this job, etc., to Mr. Hale. Now, I wonder if the letter itself can be evidence that that authority was appointed, then why in our motion to reconsider we had dealt with the Historic District Design Guideline published on 2-28-08 by the town of Warrenton, which states that Hale was the building official for the town of Warrenton. Well, if the letter can be as evidence of its own authority in giving him this offer, then why can't that guideline published by the authority of the town itself and identifying Bob Hale as the building official of Warrenton and him having that job for a pretty good while, why doesn't that document demonstrate clearly, not just implicitly like the letter is assumed to do, but explicitly that he has that authority by the town of Warrenton? And so if we can argue the letter had that kind of authority, then I think we can argue that the guideline published has even more authority. And then, with 40 seconds left or so, that the town says this could be confusing. I find it difficult to believe that the town of Warrenton can hide behind the concept of confusion when it's the town who has created the confusion by not protecting the authority of its own building official as required by the Code of Virginia through the Virginia Administrative Code. And with that, I give you back 7 seconds.
Thank you very much. Call the next case.